This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we are going to be in the area of family law, but we're focusing on using alternatives to litigation and traditional mediation for issues in dissolution of marriage. And my guests are family law attorneys and mediators. They're Esther Rosenfeld, Jill Mondry, who's also a certified specialist in family law, Lauren Zarfus, Muen Stieg. They're members of the family law section of the State Bar of California and also members of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Their offices are in San Mateo. And by the way, I want you to know this. Combined, they have 59 years of family law experience. That's pretty scary.
We're very old.
But they're not old. That's what's so interesting about this. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. Also by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. Welcome back, the three
Thank
of you.
You,
Esther, Jill, and Lauren, and welcome, Muen, to the
you,
program.
Yeah, thank you.
Last January, I don't know if you'll remember this, but we did a program on alternatives to, we called it alternative dispute resolution. As opposed to going into court and battling with one's spouse. And we did this, and it was a very well-received program. And at that time, I felt it was important to bring them back. And it's been about 5 months since my guests have been here. And so they're going to briefly kind of summarize what they talked about back in January. And then we're going to get in some issues to let you know, should you be in the difficult position of wanting to get a dissolution of your marriage or a divorce of your marriage or a separation or someone close to you, we'll talk about things that might make more practical sense than ending up in court battling with your spouse. So if you would start,
sure.
Esther, it would be nice.
Thank you, Chuck. So all of us are family law attorneys who over the years have also developed a mediation practice, and we thought that it would be helpful for your listeners if we could just recap briefly, what is this thing called mediation? Some people have had some experience with it because you can mediate in all kinds of different areas. It's particularly well suited, in our opinion, to family law cases. And that's for various reasons. Number one, a family law case is unique in that you don't have clear winners and losers. And in fact, I think it's often said by family law attorneys that when people go to court and battle it out, everybody's a loser because at the very least, they're losing a lot of money just getting involved in these long, contentious, expensive disputes. So in mediation, you're working with a neutral third party who's a facilitator. Their role is not to advocate for either party, but to help the parties reach their own solution. And two people are paying one mediator instead of both parties mm-hmm. paying an attorney, so you've got the cost factor that's significantly reduced. You can really preserve a lot of goodwill, and this is especially important where there are children involved, because more likely than not, you're going to be seeing and interacting with that ex-spouse for many years to come in the future, if you've got children. And the other beautiful thing, which I think in the last time we were here, Jill termed the magic of mediation, which I think is just such a perfect term for it, is that mediation allows for people to really get at the underlying emotional issues that are often fueling litigation. So it's really not about who's going to get, you know, one dinner set versus another dinner set or other property issues. It's really a lot of times about people's hurt feelings. And that's something that judges... Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. That judges are, that's not what the litigation system is set up to address. It's not something that a judge is supposed to be hearing. And so mediation is really uniquely qualified to allow for that kind of breaking through obstacles that are really just stopping the case from resolving. The other advantages of mediation is that the parties set their own schedule. So you're not on a court's typically glutted caseload docket.
Which is going to be more and more glutted because of the funding problems of the court.
Absolutely.
Isn't that correct?
We're already seeing that. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's absolutely right. you can set the mediation when you want. And sometimes people need a different pace. I've had cases where people have come in and within a couple of sessions, they've settled the whole case. I've had other cases where the parties came in and they needed to have a cooling off period or a breathing space where they could work with the custody schedule they had just implemented for a while and get used to it and let some scabs heal over. And then they came in and they finalized the case. So it really allows for the parties themselves to control the process and the outcome with the mediator acting as a neutral facilitator. One caution that we always tell our clients that we pointed out on your program last time is that in family law in particular, I would strongly recommend that people that are going through this seek a family law attorney mediator, in other words, somebody who does know what happens when you go to court, who is familiar with the intricacies of the family code. Because if you're, you know, there are a lot of other mediators who are very good at facilitating disputes, but they're not necessarily going to spot all the legal issues because they're not trained family law attorneys.
Let me throw something out to you.
Sure.
I did a program a couple of weeks ago on prenuptial agreements. How do you deal in a prenuptial agreement, as I understand it? It's a situation where one of the parties has quite a bit of property and is concerned that should the marriage break up down the road, he or she is not going to lose all of their property, their belongings, their money, whatever it is, because of the marriage. How do you deal in terms of your approach, which is mediation, alternative to litigation with someone who has a prenuptial agreement? Or is that something that is so unique in itself that you don't see that working to help someone who has a prenuptial agreement in resolving this through mediation? Jill, could you respond to that?
Yes, I will. A prenuptial agreement is a unique situation. We're seeing them more and more. The younger couples are seeking out a prenup, I would say, at a rapid rate, because they're aware of the fact that the statistics of marriage have changed, that people don't stay married. But bringing a prenuptial into a mediation context is not an undoable situation.
Really? Okay.
It's really appropriate what it takes. And that's, again, where Esther is talking about using an experienced family law attorney mediator would be very good, because you will be called upon to interpret the terms of the prenup. What does it mean? How was it played out during the marriage? And then what happens now? Did you create community property? Did you not? Did it address support issues or not? So again, those would all be things that would be appropriate to a mediation context.
Although the four of you are obviously good friends and you have separate offices in the same building in San Mateo, up in the city of San Mateo on the third floor, whatever floor it is, you have a unique approach to the practice of family law, as I understand it. And why is it different? And would you explain what you're doing, Lauren? Tell us, what are you doing, Lauren?
So, when you talk about ADR, alternative dispute resolution, there are so many alternatives. And one of the things that the four of us noticed, along with a couple of other practitioners on our floor, is we have this very sort of mediative approach to cases, even when we're individually representing clients. And, you know, the way that we work with these cases is what we're calling a co-mediative approach. So, in other words,
co-mediative.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're not 100% sure if that's a real word, but it is now.
Well, you're making it a real word, obviously.
It's on the radio,
yeah.
So now it's
really real.
Yeah, this is it. You've heard it here.
Exactly. And what that means is each party has their own attorney, but there is an agreement that you're not going to litigate. And instead...
Is this a written agreement?
This is a written agreement.
Okay.
And instead, the attorney mediators are going to work together with the parties to reach full resolution on a negotiated settlement of all of the issues.
So both parties have hopefully a family lawyer mediator.
Absolutely. It has to be a family law
mediator. As opposed to one mediator working with these. Okay.
Right. And so what this approach does is, you know, it really combines a lot of what is already out there. When we mediate, we advise our clients to get advice counsel so that the mediator is going to work out an agreement between the parties, but then the parties are going to want to check in with their own attorneys to make sure that all the issues have been covered, that their interests are really being protected. But what this does is it cuts out the middleman, if you will, and allows both parties to have mediators and advice counsel in the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very cost-effective approach, and we are all very committed to the idea of negotiated settlements and having parties reach agreements together. And you also have 59 years worth of experience in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Well, probably not 59 if there's only two of us, but a good amount of experience in the room to help resolve these issues.
Well, that's wonderful. Muin, yes, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add that this is something we've actually been doing, although not so formally, in practice in terms of having a written agreement. I've had cases with Esther where she's represented one party and I represented the other, and through our joint efforts in helping the clients and helping them through their emotional issues and the legal issues as well, we were able to settle cases, and the parties were able to stay out of court. And through actual cases and things and the cases we had in the past few years, we thought, why are we not doing this more? Because it's so efficient
mm-hmm.
for the parties.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, I presume that it helps parties if they're angry with each other, or let's say hateful with each other, which I guess is not that unusual. It helps to kind of simmer down people, does it not?
Absolutely,
Esther.
And,
yeah,
yeah. I think that's absolutely correct. One of the beautiful things about mediation is that a skilled, trained, experienced mediator will know how to hear the real issue behind the message and will know how to skillfully reframe it so that the other party can hear it. Because so frequently what happens in family law cases, it's a communication problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's you know, feelings behind it, and people are not able to express what they really feel to the other person. And so it comes out in anger, and there's really a lot of hurt underneath all of that. There's a grieving. And when you work with a mediator who is trained at hearing the message behind what somebody's saying, and they can then translate that and say it out loud and clarify what the real issue is, it's like the air going out of a balloon. You just see everybody kind of relax in the room and suddenly feel understood. And I've had this happen, you know, I had it happen very recently over an issue with pickup of the child. And when it was clarified between the parties and when they were able to say to each other, I really value that about what you're doing, and I really value that about what you're doing, they broke right through their impasse. So this is the kind of thing that I think probably my colleagues will agree. We see it all the time. It's what you can do in mediation and what you end up doing the opposite of, because you get so polarized when you've got attorneys battling it out in court and parties just getting angrier and angrier.
Could you give us from a real... Jill, I know you wanted to say something, but let me throw this out and then please go ahead. Would you give us some idea of the approach that you are taking to people who are going to have a dissolution of marriage? Your co-mediation approach to this, what kind of savings in terms of what one can expect compared to the traditional way where you have a case set for trial, there's discovery, depositions are taken, interrogatories are submitted, and then finally end up with a trial? What kind of difference, if you can tell us, roughly speaking, is there to a co-mediation that is successful compared to the full blast going through a trial?
This is Jill. I would say the difference is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
That is an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
I will start with the cost factor.
Yes.
When you have a model such as the model we are in, where the parties have made a written, verbal, and an actual commitment to resolve their dispute outside the court, they're going to work together cooperatively. You have open communication with all the financial issues. You follow the family code by the book, but it is done cooperatively. So you've now cut out thousands upon thousands of dollars that it would be spent in a traditional litigation just finding out numbers. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. What is applicable in family law to a co-mediative model, a mediation model, is that the code provides you have to disclose everything. Mm-hmm, so to choose a path where you play hide the ball is so inappropriate.
What if someone agrees to, signs an agreement to have co-mediation and then turns around and becomes very difficult to deal with, who does not any longer want to do co-mediation? How do you deal with someone like that? Or have you had the good experience of not having someone turn around, do a 180? Lauren?
So if the process breaks down, there is an exit strategy, whether it's the client that is as the attorney, we realize this client is not, excuse me, going to really continue in the process and have the spirit of the process of the openness and the cooperation. We can either terminate the co-mediative process, or the client can say, this is not working for me and I don't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. The trick is there will be an agreement that's already signed that says, if you choose to drop out of this process, you will need to find different counsel. Mm-hmm. So there's a real incentive to stay in the process, especially since what has been invested. And because it is mediation has its own privilege. So anything...
When you say has its own privilege, what do you mean by that?
So there's a privilege and confidentiality that attaches.
Oh, okay. Yes.
It's not just privileged people that
can go discussed, yeah. What is discussed within the mediation
exactly.
is not something, if the parties don't agree to it, that can be used should there be a trial down the road.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
And another thing I just wanted to point out and take a step back is, you know, when we look at the family law process, which is, it's part of our legal system, and our legal system is a two-party adversarial system. It's where one party sues another and says, you're wrong, mm-hmm. you damaged me, and I need you to make me whole again. Mm-hmm. And family law is somehow stuck in this process, but it doesn't fit in that process. Mm-hmm. You didn't necessarily do me wrong. We have a no-fault divorce state. This is one party wants out of the marriage. And so it's a transition. I mean, it's just like getting married is a milestone in your life. Mm-hmm. Getting divorced is a milestone.
It's a worst milestone,
It's not a good milestone.
It's not a good milestone, yeah.
But this is a way for the parties to take ownership and take control and responsibility mm-hmm. of that process, guided by attorney mediators that know the applicable law, and it gives you so much freedom because the court has jurisdiction to make certain orders, and it can only choose from A and B. In mediation, in settlement process, you can go, your choices are from A to Z, and you can craft what works for your family mm-hmm. because this will still be your family. It's going to be your family in a different form.
When you go through mediation, there then is a written agreement that is entered into, is there not?
Yes.
Signed by both parties, presumably, hopefully. That has to, though, be submitted to the court? No?
Mm-mm.
Do you not have to go to the court at all for a dissolution of marriage?
The mediation agreement itself between the mediator and the parties isn't submitted to the court. That's the retainer agreement.
Sure.
But, you know, ultimately the mediator may be the one that prepares all of the judicial counsel forms and the final marital settlement
agreement. So there has to be judicial counsel forms prepared and submitted to the court.
Yes, there is absolutely paperwork involved.
Okay. All right.
We're still lawyers.
Yeah, right. And with respect to, let me do this. Let me let everybody know what's going on. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on using alternatives to litigation and traditional mediation for issues in dissolution of marriage cases. And my guests are members of the Family Law Section of the State Bar and also the San Mateo County Bar Association, and they have law offices in San Mateo. They are not partners, but they are very good friends, and their offices, separate offices, are in the same building on the same floor in the city of San Mateo. And they are Muen Stieg, Lauren Zorfus, Jill Mondry, and Esther Rosenfeld. And for those of you who have questions, we'll be taking some questions in a few minutes. This is a live program in the Bay Area. It's live on the internet at www.kalw.org. and I'll give the phone number in just a couple of minutes. Also, I want to let you know, for those of you who are wondering, when are they doing the next Call a Lawyer Night? That will be next week, June 26th, and you'll be able to call in while I'm doing the regular program, which will actually be telecommuting from your home to your office. And we're going to talk about the rights and obligations of both employees and employers. And if you would like to join us either on the program, that is to listen to what I'm doing in the employment law area, or talk with one of the Call a Lawyers, you might want to jot down the number. The lawyers for Call a Lawyer will be available at 7 p.m. That's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Okay. What other issues do you want to try to communicate to the audience in the remainder of this half hour that we have? Yeah. Who are we pointing to? Okay, it's Nguyen. You're being pointed at. What would you like to bring up?
Well, what I think we had collectively discussed before was that we felt that this process was, it would be a good fit for so many types of divorce cases, for people who are going through their first divorce, who don't know about the process well. Through two attorney mediators, they will have guidance and advice and someone to help them through the process. For people who've previously been married and divorced and this is their second or third divorce, well, they've been through the process before, and now they know what they want to avoid.
Sure.
And having experienced attorney mediators to help them through, it speeds up the process and it makes it more efficient.
What's the most difficult? Pardon me, Jill, I know you wanted to say something. Go ahead. No?
Oh, I was going to add, we had talked earlier about prenups or postnups.
Yes.
That would be appropriate as well for attorney mediators to handle. In fact, it's a very good... A postnup would be a nuptial agreement you make soon after the wedding, or perhaps years after the wedding.
Yeah, before, obviously, people are thinking about a dissolution of the marriage.
And it may not even be related to dissolution.
Yes.
It may be related to...
Just trying to get along?
Providing for children from other relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would be one instance where you'd use that.
Where do you find in the co-mediation or the co-mediative process, where do you find the most difficult areas, generally speaking, if there are?
I find custody is frequently
the most
contentious
and
area.
And what is it? What is it that people don't see the practicality of sharing 50-50? Or what do you see? What's the problem?
Frequently it comes down to trust. Parties don't trust one another that the children's needs will be taken care of. And this is, again, an area where, in the litigated framework, things can quickly spin out of control. When you're mediating or co-mediating, you can really dig down and get to the concerns that somebody has about their child and then address those concerns appropriately. So that's one of the areas that I think is particularly well suited to mediation and co-mediation. I just wanted to go back to something also that Lauren had mentioned, that I think so much of the nomenclature around any kind of civil litigation has the effect of polarizing people further. You know, we talk about opposing counsel, we talk about document demands, and everything is counter this and counter that. And one of the things that we can do in mediation and in co-mediation is really reframe things in a way that we're addressing issues and we're gathering information. You know, as we talked about, the same rules apply when you're in mediation. You still have an affirmative duty to provide all the information on the finances, to put all the cards on the table, to be an open book. The legislature has told us that that's how family cases should be run.
That's the trust relationship between spouses,
right? Well, that's the
legal
rule.
That's
the rule. You have to provide that information, and yet at the same time, when you throw people into a litigated context, what's the first instinct they have is to draw their cards close to their chest to play hide the ball. So, just another point about why this is such a preferable way to resolve family law disputes. Or maybe I shouldn't use the term disputes. Maybe I should use the term
transitions.
Thank you.
Yeah, transition. What though? How do you deal then when you say that more frequently it's the custody issue that's the problem and the lack of trust between spouses? How do you get people to divorcing people to really start seeing that we have to work together? Muen, how do you do this?
Chuck, you know, in my experience, I've had cases with custody disputes in litigation where the couples have spent years, 1 to 2 years in court with custody evaluators, with motions, various motions in court to talk about how much time each parent should have with each child. This takes years. It costs each party $50,000 or more. And you're paying a custody evaluator anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 to come in and spend 60, 80 hours visiting with you and your children. So this, and this isn't good for the children because the parents, as Esther said, they get angrier with each other, and the collateral damage are the children, which is very sad. I recently had a mediation case where the couple came in, and in 2 hours, we discussed and figured out the entire custody parenting schedule.
That's wonderful.
They discussed how they were going to work with each other to accommodate one parent's work schedule and travel schedule. We talked about how childcare would be provided, how they would work out extracurricular activities, the vacation schedule, the child's summer schedule, in 2 hours.
And you then would put that, or have put, I presume, put that into writing, signed by both parties.
Yes.
In the normal, let's say, litigation case, and I'm not talking about family law, but just regular where people have disputes, whatever it may be, discovery is a big thing, taking depositions, sending out interrogatories, questions that the other party has to answer under oath. Do you find that there's any need for something like this in your co-mediation approach? And apparently not. You're shaking your heads as no. So the listeners didn't see you do that.
And they can't see Jill's new haircut either. No, there's no need for it. I mean, as Jill mentioned before, that we have a statutory obligation for full disclosure, and it's part of the process.
And do you say that the state of mind of these people is such in a co-mediative process where they have signed the agreement not to litigate that they will, most of the time, honor this and be open and put the cards on the table?
This is Jill, and I think we're all shaking our head yes,
that's
emphatically, and very much so.
That's good. All right. It is 7:27 and a half. This is 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. If you would like to join us with a question, a comment, a concern, whatever, you know, these are difficult areas that I have found. I've been doing this program, as if you've been listening for a few years, I've mentioned that this year was the 29th year I've been doing this. And family law has been one of the most difficult areas for people to call in and ask a question. It could be that they don't want their spouse or their former spouse to hear their name or their voice, I should say. And it's been difficult. But what we're trying to do with this program and the focus that my guests are talking about is to try to help you if you have a problem or someone close to you has a problem, that this can be a very positive approach. If you can't live with each other because of various things, this is a great way to try to end that relationship, at least the legal relationship between yourselves, and try to work out the other issues, especially if there are children. So if you would like to call in, ask a question, make a comment, the number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And if you feel more comfortable in not having your voice on the air, that's fine. I would much prefer you to give a false name, if you like, and be on the air, because it'll help help us in doing that. But if you feel you just can't, then you can call in and give a, if you would, a succinct question or comment, and Martin will bring it in. So again, that number 1-415-841-4134. And before we take our first call, the four of you prepared this very nice outline of things that you wanted to talk about. Time flies so quickly that I think what I'd like to mention about this, is that this co-mediation process is not suitable for domestic violence cases. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. And if there is a power imbalance, if one is a bully and the other is not, it may not work, especially if you have a sole mediator.
That's right.
Yeah. So those are some things to keep in mind.
If I might just clarify,
Esther,
I think that power imbalance problem is really corrected for in the co-mediation process, because in the co-mediation process, again, your mediator is also your attorney. So you've got somebody in your corner who can advocate
who's
for
there.
You at the same time that they're helping to settle the case.
Well, that's nice to know. All right. Betty, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi, Betty. Yeah, go ahead.
I love the idea of co-mediation, and I work in family law. I was wondering if the attorneys ever use vocational evaluations to help parties find a vocational plan and to set spousal support amounts.
This is Jill, and I'll answer that if you'd...
Please.
Absolutely, Betty. And co-mediation and mediation, even though we've discussed earlier a very streamlined approach, saying the attorney and client meetings are set up and mediated, is not the only way or model that we use. We would call in, as necessary, a vocational evaluator if the parties require that. That may give us information that we would otherwise not have at hand. In addition to vocational evaluation, we may or may not call in a financial specialist, someone who maybe will value stock options. That's a common issue. Another common professional that we would utilize would be a neutral actuary to help us value pension plans.
Mm.
And so those three would be the most traditional
okay.
that we would
right.
call
Does
them.
That help you, Betty?
Certainly. I do vocational evaluations. I probably am known to some of your attorneys in San Francisco. And it's very good to know that you are thinking of vocational evaluations, because I think our approach is very similar to the co-mediation, which is to lower tensions and to provide answers and to get people situated in their new lives and through the transition. So thank you. That's great.
Betty, thank you very much for calling in. And by the way, I want to mention to those of you who would like to pose a question or a comment, it will work much better for the program if you are willing to speak on the air. And so if you're concerned about the fact that you don't want your either the spouse you're going to get divorced from or your former spouse, use some other name and get on the air, because it'll make the program go that much more quickly. You'll be on the air asking the question of my guests, and they'll give you an answer, and then we can take the next caller. Because the problem is, if you just want to have your question or comment written down by Martin and brought in the studio, it's not going to work. So please try to be brave on this and be on the air, and we'll get through this as quickly as we can. And by the way, for those of you who don't get on the air with us or get your question answered, we will have next week on Call a Lawyer, one of the guests for Call a Lawyer, off the air that is, will be a family law specialist, so you'll have a chance to call in then at 1-800-525-9917. And Richard, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. I think the co-mediation program as described is quite marvelous. I have a very specific question. At what point in this co-mediation process is it possible to do whatever is necessary, legal separation or whatever, to end the community property aspect of the marriage, so that the finances are separate as you go through this process? Can that be done?
Okay. Lauren, please.
Sure. It's actually part of either the dissolution or legal separation process is to end the community and separate the community assets and have them confirmed to either party. So it's built in as part of the process. And the end result of this process is going to be a marital settlement agreement that's incorporated into a judgment that would then be filed with a court. So it's very clear where the obligations are.
The question is, though, can this be determined or decided at the beginning of the process, which may take a while?
Absolutely. It's driven by the parties and their needs. So for some parties, we have to talk about the kids right away. We can let the property wait. For other parties, we need the property addressed first. And that's part of what's worked out in this process is what is most important to the parties, what are their priorities, and we work around that.
I see. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, Richard, thank you very much for calling. Is the law such, generally speaking, in the family law area, that if parties separate, one moves out of the home and lives somewhere else, is that separation considered to be the basis upon which community property stops at that point? Or does Lauren, you're laughing at that. Okay, I know nothing about family law, but go ahead.
Because, Chuck, you're an attorney, and you know the answer to any legal question.
No, I don't.
It depends.
I don't.
The answer is always, it depends.
It depends. Yeah. There we go. It depends. Okay, all right. Meg, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So first of all, I just want to say I'm a big advocate of mediation for separation. My husband and I are, I would say, 3/4 of the way through it. It's been a really great process. Where we're stuck is in the division of my pension, actually, is really our sticky point. And my question was kind of what you just said, was around when does our community property end? So, like, in terms of filing for taxes, what have you, at what point are we considered, you know, separated? And then the other piece is, I'm trying to figure out a way to corner him into making a decision about if he's going to take...
He doesn't like being cornered, huh?
Well, right. And for suffering, no. He doesn't like making decisions about anything, and I'm kind of like, I don't feel like I'm going to make the decision about you taking half of my pension. You know what I mean? Like, that feels to be like a lot of extra work that I would do in order to...
Where are you in this process at this point? Do either of you have an attorney yet?
Oh, no, we are 3/4 of the way through. We've already
you are.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Well, I'm just waiting to hear his decision around that.
I see.
I'm kind of tired of waiting.
Okay. All right. Well, Esther, do you want to respond?
Sure. So, Meg, date of separation is a term of art in family law, and it means, according to the statute, the date at which one party formed the intent that the marriage was irretrievably broken and communicated that intent. Now, does this have to be in words, writing, what... That we don't know. So there are cases that analyze what happened in a particular fact pattern and tell us that it could be through behavior, it could be through words, it could be the date that somebody moved out. There was a case that came down, excuse me, sometime in the early 2000s, marriage of Norviel, I think, which stated that parties needed to be physically separated. It was very criticized because for economic reasons, sometimes that's not always feasible. But if people are living in two different homes and yet they're constantly going out together, they're taking vacations together, he gives her roses on Mother's Day, he's doing his laundry at her house. I'm describing to you an actual case that goes into date of separation in quite a lot of detail. That means that the date of separation may not be until a later date and not an earlier date. So what happens, the beauty of mediation is that the two of you can decide on the date that makes the most sense. And it sounds like you've had discussions about that and you're waiting to hear back from him on something.
Does he not have a pension, Meg?
I'm sorry, does he not?
Does he not have a pension?
No, his pension's just, I was the breadwinner in our
Okay, I see.
So
okay, all right.
He does, but it's much smaller. So
you're very concerned about that. Any other comments for Meg, Lauren?
Well, the only other thing that I would add, Meg, is you said you're in the mediation process, and it's really important, this kind of goes back to the other question that we had, that you communicate to the mediator what your priorities are and what your concerns are. So if you're kind of waiting on a decision, I mean, what you need to know is that the divorce is not going to be finalized until the decision is made. So you need to have a decision on that, and I think, you know, if you bring that up with the mediator, he or she needs to know this is important to you and this is something you're waiting on, as opposed to cornering your soon-to-be ex-husband.
Have you tried that, Meg, talking to the mediator about this?
No, I've only talked to him about it. That's a really nice, useful piece of information. Thank
you. And this is a family lawyer who's also a mediator, is that correct?
Yes, she's really reputable.
Okay, all right, very good. Well, good luck to you, Meg.
Thanks for your time, okay.
Yeah, good luck to you. Thanks very much for calling. Okay, we've got here Bill. Bill, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much. Hi. It's a very good topic tonight. I recently went through a divorce and we're completed. My son was three His mother was from Hong Kong, but she'd been living here for 5 years. And she wanted to take him back to Hong Kong. And even though the law is pretty clear that you can't, she could order a custody evaluation, and we had to go through that. And it's, as you said, a very lengthy and expensive process. But the custody evaluators we had was very good, and they've seen it all, at least she had in her 30 years. It's just at the beginning, whereas I'd be open to co-mediation, when it involves your child, you know, I think there's an extra layer of stress there, and you feel compelled to fight and get your own attorney and go from there, and that's what I did. Fortunately, it ended up well. You know, it's he has stays here. It's, the mother stayed here, 50-50 custody, and so.
So
make that comment.
So she decided not to go back to Hong Kong?
Well, you know, we kind of knew she wouldn't go back without the child.
I see.
Yeah.
But she was not able to work out any kind of an agreement with you where she would go back to Hong Kong and your child would be with her a certain period of the year. Is that right?
That's right. I don't think she was open to that, and
okay.
I certainly wasn't open to that.
You were not. Okay. Jill, you had something.
Yeah. It's Bill, correct?
Yep.
Jill.
Yeah.
This is Bill.
Yeah. Bill, you brought up a very good point, which is, and that's a reason that this panel is working with the model of co-mediation with attorney mediators, because you are correct. A lot of people come into this process and say, you know, I have too much to lose to come into the process and sit at a table without really knowing what my rights are. And you may or may not have the money to have full litigation. And so the alternative of having an attorney mediator sitting with you would assist you in saying, okay, I'm giving you that safety net.
Yes.
I'm safe. I understand that this is how the process works, and I will be heard in a certain way, and I will be protected as I go through the decision-making process.
Understood.
Bill, are you saying that you were able to work this out with your wife through mediation without having to go into court and having any kind of hearings in court?
No, we had to go the whole way.
We
had to go through the court. We had to go through the whole custody evaluation process,
which
is about 9 months. And, you know, it's difficult because, in a way, you're trying out to be what you already are, you know, the parent to your child. But, you know, the other parent, even though they really can't take the child out of the country, they have the right to call for a custody evaluation.
Of course.
And in most cases, you know, the judge will grant that. And I'm just saying, you know, it's difficult enough when your soon-to-be ex-spouse puts the future of your child in the hands of a third party, you know, not the two parents, but, you know, a court or so.
Yes.
And it's even worse if you don't think that, you know, you have an attorney on your side fighting.
Who made the final decision that your wife agreed with to stay here so that your child would stay here? Was it the court, or were you able to, through your respective attorneys, work this out?
It went through. We were going to go to court, and it was just one of those last-minute settlements of the attorney.
I see.
Before we had to go to the final hearing.
Oh, so you went to a final hearing with an agreement to present to the court?
Yes.
Well, that's good. Well, that saved you some nastiness in terms of unfortunate testimony, et cetera, that may have gone on in court.
My comment is, I think, in my experience, the custody evaluators are very fair, very even-handed. They've seen everything before. Most of them have a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the process is pretty predictable what will happen, unless you're a really, really bad parent doing really, really bad things.
Well, terrific, Bill. Thank you very much for letting us know. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. All right. Richard, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
How are you?
Hi, fine. How are you, Richard?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Considering. My question basically is that my marriage ended 2 years ago. We've been separated for 2 years. She's living in another state, and I'm kind of curious how this mediation process would work in those conditions.
Okay. You're in California. Where is she?
She's in New York.
In New York?
Yes.
A little far off. But what comments do you have about, you know, 3,000-mile co-mediation? Esther.
That's a good question, Richard. I don't think it's impossible. I think it's harder. There have certainly been, I've had mediated cases where one party was on the line. I know other attorneys have done that as well. The trouble is that when the party is not there, they may feel like they're not participating as much in the process. And here again, I think that in co-mediation, that is corrected for to a much greater degree than it would in sole mediation, because you've got an attorney advocate who is also co-mediating. And Lauren just handed me a note to mention that Skype is an option that can also diminish that that sense of not being as involved. So
SKYPE.
PE,
what does that stand for?
It's the internet program that allows people to appear by camera.
Oh, yeah.
Video conferencing.
Yes.
Okay, so you would conduct it long distance, possibly that way then.
Right. Well, where would her attorney be? Does she still have her California attorney here?
No, we haven't even begun this process. We just parted company. There was a considerable degree of acrimony involved in this, and we just parted company. And she's been living there for two years, and I've been still living in California.
So you parted company 2 years ago, and neither of you has done anything formal.
There has been no legal process involved in this.
But both of you feel that there's no reconciliation, right?
Well, I would be the person who frankly wants to end this marriage. I was the breadwinner in this and kept going for 20 plus years.
Mm. Well, you would
be the person. Go ahead.
Sorry, Richard. You would both need to be bought into the process, and assuming that both of you wanted to co-mediate, she would need to get an attorney here.
Right, in California.
Because it's a California marriage.
Correct.
Right. Right.
Does that answer your question? I'm sorry if I'm not.
No, it actually really does. I wasn't really aware of how to begin this process. Just that it's time to move on.
You know, one of the things that I might suggest to you, Richard, is that let me give you a website.
Sure.
I'm a great one of the major funders of this program is the Board of Legal Specialization. Jill is a certified specialist in family law, but I want to give you the website for the Board of Legal Specialization. You can find out where are you calling from. Where do you live?
I live in the Bay Area. I live over in Contra Costa County.
Okay. You can go to the website, www.californiaspecialist.org. Specialist is singular, californiaspecialist.org.
Okay.
And then you can find who the certified specialists in family law are in your county.
Right.
And what you might want to do is when you find out who they are and a phone number, you might want to call and ask some questions, get some kind of an understanding of what to expect. And your wife might want to do that, too.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, that sounds great.
That's an easier way, I think, to do it. You know, you can always contact the local bar association, the Contra Costa Bar Association, lawyer referral service. You can do that. But I'm a great believer in people starting with at least trying to find out something about how the system works by using the Board of Legal Specialization website.
Okay, great. Thank
so
you.
Good luck to you. All right. Let me mention to you that if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And if you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to speak to a human being and tell them what the problem is, whatever it may be, and they'll do their best to find someone who's experienced to talk with you, set up an appointment for you with an attorney, half an hour consultation. Most counties, for a half an hour, range anywhere from $25 to $35. It's a great service. The lawyer doesn't get it. It's the lawyer referral service that gets it and gets the money. And it's a great way to try to get some information starting with whatever problem you have. Okay, let's talk now with Susan. Susan, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thank you. So here's my question. My question is, when you're speaking about co-mediation, are you referring to collaborative practice or collaborative law? Are there any differences that you see?
Yes, Laura. Lauren, pardon me.
Sure. Collaborative law is its own sort of separate entity, if you will. There are collaborative law groups by county, and there's a criteria for taking a collaborative law case that is established by the collaborative law group. Typically, in the collaborative law case, you're going to have the attorneys as well as various professionals, a financial professional, a therapy professional, that are going to assist throughout the process. The co-mediation process utilizes different criteria, has different techniques, and while certainly professionals can be brought in, it's not necessarily going to start out with other professionals as part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like it's more than you're talking about different techniques. Can you specify a little bit so I can understand the difference in the techniques you're speaking of?
This is Jill, and I'll type
Jill?
In
yeah,
a minute.
Please.
I think if it does help you, collaborative approach, the local groups in the Bay Area have what is called a team approach right now, and that is that you are obligated to work with a coach, with a financial, with the attorneys at the table, and the co-mediative approach that we are working under is more streamlined, and as Lauren has said, it is an option to bring the other professionals to the table. It's not an obligation to start with them. Yes.
Yeah.
And if I could just add one more thing to that. Interestingly, if you look at Family Code Section 2013, which is the code section that governs the collaborative law process, it doesn't specify that you must have a CPA and you must have a custody coach and you
right.
must have a communication coach
right.
and whatnot. It just says that it's a process by which parties and professionals that they engage agree in writing to use their best efforts to resolve family law disputes on an agreed upon basis without resorting to adversary judicial intervention.
Right.
So that's what we're doing. It's a different model, as Jill and Lauren were describing.
Yeah, because my understanding of collaborative practice is that in cases that other professionals would be helpful, it's encouraged, but it's not necessarily a requirement. It is something that's encouraged, but not necessarily a requirement. That's my understanding.
This is Jill, Susan. And it depends on the group that you're working with collaborative law. So again, there are several providers in the Bay Area. You would be able to find them on the Internet. And most of them, however, work under what is called a team model. So if you were interested in an alternative to that, I know they are developing other models of collaborative law. I am not sure, as I sit at this desk, what would be offered to you. But again, that would be something you'd be able to research on the Internet.
Yeah, it sounds like it's something that we should ask people about when we're looking around for appropriate services.
Sure, sure. Do your homework and ask questions before you finally make a commitment to working with any one person. Good luck to you, Susan. Thanks for calling. Here's a question that was brought in, and it's more general and something to help people educate themselves. What resources are available, a handbook, websites, workshop, to familiarize marriage partners with the process? Are there any handbooks? I know that NOLO.com has a book, I think, on family law. Certainly I'm a believer in NOLO.com. It is not one of the funders of this program, so I'm not making a pitch.
Maybe they will be now.
I've been involved to some degree with NOLO.com. It used to be NOLO Press for many, many, many years in terms of guests on the program. And I'm a great believer in their books, which you can find in the the consumer sections of most public libraries. Certainly, if there's something that is of significance to you and a real problem, I think it's worth it to go out and go to a good bookstore and find it in the consumer section.
If you can find a bookstore these days.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, it's hard to find a bookstore sometimes. Any websites that you would recommend? Yes, Lauren.
And I apologize. The website, the URL has changed, but courtinfo.ca.gov will get you to the new URL. It still will point you to the new one. I don't know the new one, but it's the Judicial Council's website, and there is a whole self-help section.
Yes.
And a lot of information about family law is in there. And the other thing is, it's interesting, for me, when we were talking about prenups, one of the things that I find so incredibly beneficial about doing a mediated prenup is it's not normally the first time parties are going to hear about what community property is. Mm-hmm. What are their rights and obligations, both during a marriage and when a marriage would end? And to me, it's the best primer that you could get for going into a marriage, because it's what we hear more often than not as we're going through our divorces with our clients is, I didn't know any of this. Why didn't anybody tell me this?
Yeah. Let me give that website again for the court website, the self-help website, courtinfo.ca.gov/self-help. courtinfo.ca.gov/self-help. Our last caller is Anna. Welcome to the program.
Hi, yes, thank you.
Hi.
Hi, I have two questions. And the first question is, I like the attorney referral services, but I was wondering if you could recommend any resources for co-mediation with attorney mediators for low-income or sliding-scale people.
What would you recommend? Who's going to take this shot first?
Well,
Lauren, please.
There is a different pay structure for the co-mediation process that we have been describing here, which is going to be a lot more cost-effective than two parties hiring individual attorneys along with paying an attorney mediator. So there is a different price structure for this. I'm not aware of any other. Unfortunately, you know, we have very little nonprofit legal services in the county, and certainly for family law, there's next to nothing, unfortunately. But there is, as I said, a different pay structure for this.
Mm-hmm. And Anna, this is Jill. I don't know which county you're in, but I know San Mateo County has a panel of mediators. So if your case is active in San Mateo County, you will find brochures or pamphlets in the courtroom and in the clerk's office. That will point you to a panel of mediators. They assign you a mediator, and I know the first hour and a half is for, I think, $50 total, maybe $25
each
participant.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so that's pretty cost effective.
Yeah. We have about half a minute, Anna. What's your second question?
My second question is for counseling services. This is actually for a friend that was in a situation of domestic violence. And so he's terrified that his ex-wife will injure him or the child. And so he needs some informed counseling help.
Oh, my. That's a very serious issue.
Yeah. And so he needs a counselor who also knows something about the law. And I'm just, it's beyond what I can do. So are there any services or resources for someone who can get that kind of counseling service?
Does he need mental health counseling? Is that what you're saying that he needs, Anna?
He needs both that, but with implications for his divorce.
Well, most mental health counselors are not going to be qualified to give legal advice, nor are they going to be comfortable giving legal advice. So he probably needs both.
Yeah.
We're going to have to end it here. I'm sorry, Anna, not to be able to give you something more specific on this. Why don't you join us again for Call a Lawyer next week, 1-800-525-9917 at 7. You can talk with one of the family law certified specialist at that time and maybe get some more insight. Thank you very much for calling. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Chuck.
Lovely
thank
to have you.
Chuck.
We're over. We don't have any more to say. We've come to the end of the program. I want to thank my members of the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the San Mateo County Bar Association, Jill Mondry, Esther Rosenfeld, Lauren Zorfas and Muen Stieg. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, by the San Mateo County Bar Association, by the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. If you're an employee or an employer, we're going to do employment law next week, focusing on telecommuting from home to work, the rights and obligations of employees and employers. My guests are employment law attorneys Lisa Lawson and Sharon Vinnick, members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Feeney.